And Tegan, you're looking into another unnecessary nutrient, alcohol.
Well, yes.
You can call it a nutrient.
Yeah, well, it's certainly something that we consume. And this is a bit more of a serious story because we know that drinking alcohol can lead to death, either because of something sudden and unexpected like a drink driving accident or a long-term thing like liver disease. But it looks like we might have actually been underestimating these deaths. And it has to do with something called the sick quitter effect, which I kind of like because it's catchy. Are you familiar with this term?
Absolutely. It used to be said there was a U-shaped curve where a J-shaped curve, just imagine a J, where both sides of the curve were high risk and there was a sweet spot in the middle, maybe two or three drinks a day. And so you were at high risk because you drank no alcohol. So no alcohol was bad for you was the assumption, and high amounts of alcohol were bad for you. But there was something about that left-hand risk curve.
Yes, indeed. So what you often are finding when you're looking at people who drink no alcohol at all, they might not have never drunk alcohol at all. It could be that they don't drink because they're sick because of previous harm caused by alcohol.
Therefore, it's not the alcohol that's causing the increased risk of illness. It's the illness itself.
Correct. So we have actually known this for decades, but a new study has found that the majority of review studies still don't adjust for this phenomenon, which is still giving us a distorted view of alcohol's effects on our health. I've been chatting with lead author Peter Sarich.
Maybe a couple of decades ago, it was thought that perhaps alcohol might contribute to some protection against cardiovascular disease, mortality, and maybe some other conditions. But increasingly in recent years, that evidence has become a lot weaker. And that's actually part of what our study shows, is that over 70% of the reviews on alcohol harm published since 1993, over 70% of them use non-drinkers as the comparison group, which can cause biased results due to that sick quitter effect. And there's also evidence from other sources. There's something, there's a type of study called a Mendelian randomization study, which is based on genetic evidence around alcohol consumption and harms. And that type of study fails to find any protective effects. So it does appear, based on recent evidence, that this J-shaped curve, a large part of that could be due to those sorts of biases like the sick quitter effect.
So from a research perspective, what should we be doing differently if we want to understand the health risks of alcohol properly?
There's a few other person groups that can be used. So one is to examine those people who've never drank alcohol rather than just all non-drinkers combined, which includes former drinkers. So this is what's done with smoking, for example. In most of studies of smoking, never smokers are used as the comparison group when we're studying the health effects of people who currently smoke. So the same sort of thing can be done with alcohol as well. Looking at never drinkers, using those as the comparison group when researching the harms of drinking. Another idea is also to use sort of people who only drink on special occasions, who just drink occasionally, because those people are more likely, we think, to have sort of sociodemographic characteristics that are more similar to other drinkers. And so that is also probably a fair comparison group to use as well.
Right. So a never drinker maybe is more likely to be from very particular ethnic or religious groups, perhaps.
That's right. So there are socioeconomic differences between those who drink and those who never drink alcohol. There is increasingly evidence that those who have never drank also are more likely to have health conditions that might be causing them not to drink in the first place.
Sure.
And so that's why perhaps maybe those who drink on special occasions might be the best comparison group to use.
So this is very much about like how we crunch data. What does the everyday person take away from this research?
So I think this study is a timely reminder for Australians to follow the national health guidelines on alcohol. While there is no healthy amount of alcohol, the national guidelines state that Australian adults should drink no more than 10 standard drinks per week, with no more than 4 on any one day. And the less you drink, the lower your risk of harm from alcohol. 32% of us are actually exceeding this guideline, though. And even more concerning are the recent statistics from the ABS finding that alcohol-induced deaths in Australia have been increasing over the past 10 years. And of all deaths caused by alcohol in Australia, a large portion are actually from cancer. So the more people drink, the higher their risk of dying from one of the several types of cancer that are caused by alcohol. And what many people don't know is that alcohol actually causes more cancer deaths each year than UV radiation. Yet awareness of the risks in Australia is low.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but if we're looking at deaths from alcohol, presumably we're focusing on people who have at some stage in their life drunk quite heavily. How does this research sit against our understanding of harms of alcohol at lower levels of consumption?
So the study shows that over 70% of previous reviews on alcohol and risk of death at lower levels of alcohol consumption may have been biased due to this sick quitter effect issue. So two of the reviews included in the study actually did compare what happens when you use non-drinkers as the comparison group compared to never drinkers as the comparison group. And both of them actually found the apparent protection with light drink actually was overestimated or became non-significant when switching to using non-drinkers as the comparison group.
Right. So any kind of shadow of potential protection from light drinking kind of disappeared once they sort of corrected for that.
Yeah, it does seem to be substantially reduced. That's right.
What kind of surprised you as a researcher in this space when you started looking at it closely?
I think what surprised me was that the sick quitter issue was first written about in the 1980s. So it was sort of a bit concerning that most reviews, over 70%, did include ex-drinkers in the comparison group. And it means that the majority of reviews over the past 30 years may have underestimated the number of deaths that alcohol causes.
Has it changed your own relationship with alcohol, if you don't mind me asking?
I drink alcohol sort of on special occasions. So
so you should be in the reference group for one of these studies, in other words.
Yeah, I guess you could say that.
Given that you're saying that we've been underestimating the harm of alcohol for potentially 30 years, are our guidelines still fit for purpose if they're based on this evidence?
So I think you would never really base the guidelines just on one study. So every 10 years or so, the alcohol guidelines do get updated, and that's based on the review of all the evidence available at the time. So I guess we would like to see the sick quitter effect and the evidence generated from this study to be considered when the next time the guidelines are in development.
So that's Peter Sarich, who's a research fellow at the Daffodil Centre. And that chat really did get me thinking about, it feels to me at least, maybe it's just my algorithm serving me this, that I'm hearing a lot more about risks of drinking at much lower levels than probably that study's capturing.
Yeah. Look, essentially, it's a straight line. The more you drink, the more the risk. There's no safe level of alcohol use. Health Canada has just recommended no more than 2 drinks a week.
Yeah.
Aiming for 0. The Australian guidelines really, in essence, are pragmatic rather than necessarily being particularly evidence-based. And I think Peter was alluding to that.
Yeah, I'm really interested to see how, when they're adjusted again within that 10-year time frame, if there is a big shift. I think it would be a really big cultural shift for Australia if there was.
Yeah, well, Canadians drink as well.
Mm.
But that's it for the Health Report for this week. If you want more, you should definitely check out our other podcast, What's That Rash?, where we're answering the health questions that everyone's asking.
And this week, it's the question that every teenager in history has ever asked. Why on earth do we get pimples?
You mean plucs, don't you?
Ugh, that word makes me want to honestly puke.
God, you're so squeamish. But we are answering your acne-related questions, and you've been sending in plenty of them. Just search What's That Rash in the ABC Listen app and hit that follow button while you're there so that you get every episode.
I promise they're not always this gross. Also, when you're in the podcasting neighbourhood, make sure you're following the Health Report too, and we'll see you next week.
We certainly shall.
Think bigger about the world we live in. Ask your smart speaker to play ABC RN.